Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, and sat alongside me, as always, my trusty and good friend Phil. How are you, Philip?
Hello, JB. I'm not quite always here. I wasn't here 2 weeks ago when I was indulging myself in Oslo.
Oh, yes,
but I am quite. Here. I am here now.
Yeah, and down the line, Tim Cocker. Tim, all week I've felt so bad for you. It must be very, very difficult.
Care to explain, JV?
50-year anniversary of the moon landings. I mean, it must be eating you alive. You must be desperate to correct everyone on this one, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think they were fake. Yeah, that's right.
They never happened. But yeah, all these idiots are writing about it. It must be awful for you. Anyway, how are you?
The Egg Chaser shipping container is... It's just made its way back from Suffolk for the Latitude Festival. I did enjoy myself, but
as much as Will Greenwood would.
The last two weekends, I've basically learned a couple of things. One, that very few fans or players of rugby attend music festivals, just judging by the. Just really the body type of your average punters that go there.
I saw an amazing video today. It was a video of Shaquille O'Neal entering
the mosh pit.
Yes, that mosh was pit. Awesome.
Yeah.
And he was going at about 20%, I would guess.
Yeah.
10%.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And the other thing I learned was that guitars are for on stage, not... There's always one person, and I happen to get the person on the campsite who brought his acoustic guitar with him so he could do some very average renditions of songs at about 4 a.m.
That guy.
Oh, wonderful.
Guy. I've never been to a music festival, and I don't think I intend to for this exact reason. I mean, you're basically outlining all the stereotypes of all the people I wouldn't get on with. No one on my speed dial conforms to that stereotype.
Yeah, you're right. I was there working, so I did have access to areas that I could get away and kind of decompress away from the levels of hipster, which just exceeded all expectation.
Mm. Well, we are a day late because, of course, you're on your mind-altering party drugs at Latitude, and I was what was I doing? I was getting a train back from North Wales. It was like the last flight out of Saigon. It was absolutely dreadful. And to make it worse, I decided I'd take my road bike with me. I had to stand with my road bike upright in between the carriages whilst a woman who was 5 months pregnant fainted into my arms.
What?
Yeah, I had a bike in one hand. Yeah. I had a woman in my other hand. Yeah, what can you do, eh? Except for, you know, be a hero.
Now, is that why you were stravering while on the train?
Because you
had your road bike on the train, so
exactly.
You thought, I'm going to break some records here.
And that's exactly what happened. Average speed, 100 kilometres an hour.
197 kilometres per hour, JB.
20,000 calories burned. Well, we are a day late, and we announced it on Twitter.
We did.
And some of you, it seems to be, you actually miss us.
Well, there was far more, like, criticism than... gratefulness or missing us, but it was all very appreciated. Just being thought about was appreciated.
So what were they saying on our Twitter, at Rugby Podcast?
So some of the favourites. So Chris Robinson said, cheers, the sun's crying. Nice one.
Nice.
Mark Gibson asked, has Jonathan Beardmore been to another wedding with a zip line?
No, I had not.
Call back to an older pod. Thinking, Feeling, Surviving, Believing on Rugby Podcast.
Oh, James O'Connor. Nice to know he's, nice to know he listens.
He said, what am I paying you for? where are we? Grant Williams said, great Monday morning commute with Stephen Jones's back catalogue now. Oof. And then the vomit emoji. Oof.
Stephen Jones, who will not be at the podcast festival for reasons that we don't know. Nothing to do with tickets.
Yes. Tom Silk wondered if it was to do with a particularly explosive episode of Love Island.
Oh, yes.
High drama. High drama.
Simon RJ said he crashed his Maserati into the stoop. He was so upset.
Wow. One of many Maseratis, I imagine, which have been written off around the stoop area.
I imagine.
A few too many champagnes, getting your Maserati.
Robert Smith also did a bit of a humble brag, where he said, FFS, I've just trodden on a sea urchin in St. Lucia.
Ooh.
And now this. Is there no end to my suffering today?
Thoughts and prayers.
Absolutely.
We are at Rugby Podcast. We haven't talked about rugby yet, so let's jump straight into the England squad, which got announced today.
Oh, yes. So there was an update on the England squad ahead of them travelling to Treviso, the home of JB's beloved Benetton.
The home of real rugby.
To do a warm weather training camp. Eddie Jones
they
said...
They really stayed in England this week for that.
Yeah, didn't need to go.
Yeah, it's nice though, isn't it?
To go to Prosecco region.
Exactly. A few coffees with the boys.
Some proper Italian coffee.
Yeah, some 2,000-year-old buildings. Yeah, it's lovely. Why not?
Absolutely. So they're off there, and there was... Well, all they did was announce... the squad, the 35 players who are travelling, and then from that you could deduce, sorry, not 35, 38 players who are travelling. From that you could deduce who has dropped out from last week.
Mm-hmm.
So shall I read you the list of players who've dropped out? Because only
you may.
Every single publication has only mentioned one name, but there are more people who have dropped out because of this.
Okay, yes, and we all know who the name is. Sam Burgess has not made it.
Sam Burgess cut, unceremoniously cut. No, the players dropping out. So last week there were 5 extra bodies who came into the squad for the Bristol camp to hold tackle shields. 4 of them have dropped out. Those 4 are Tom Dunn, Alex Dunbrandt, Magic Marcus Smith,
damn,
and Ollie Thorley.
Okay,
with the 5th one of that. Group, Mike Brown retaining his place. Then there was 2 other players who dropped out. One who was part of the squad proper and one who was not part of the squad proper. So Ben...
When they dropped out, they dropped themselves out, injury or some such thing?
No, this has just been dropped out from the re-announced squad.
Okay.
So the one who's dropped out of the proper squad, who no one has mentioned, was Ben Moon.
Oh, bloody hell, didn't know that.
So nowhere seems to have mentioned this from today. Now,
poor Ben Moon.
Poor Ben Moon.
By the way, a cracking player. A player's player.
A brilliant player. And who made probably the single best hit of the, I think it was the Autumn Internationals.
Now, I know I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention it again anyway. Every time that I talk to a tight head that has played against Ben Moon, they have nothing but nasty things to say about him in a good way, if that makes sense. Like he's one of those players that you need to play against to realise how good he actually is.
Mm.
He took his chance on the international stage, didn't he?
I mean, what more do you want? Anyway, look, there are options, aren't there?
It's probably the most stacked position, most stacked single position.
Well, you've got
assuming that. So the 3 in there are Ellis Genge,
yeah,
Marler, who's returned and looking sharp, and Mako.
Yeah, he would drop.
Well, okay, so I would drop 2 of them, actually.
Which 2?
So Mako is obviously your boy, right? And I actually think the Mahler situation, because he retired when Ben Moon's busy scrummaging and putting in hits for England, Ben Moon should have got the benefit of the doubt regardless, because that's what team dynamic and team spirit and all the rest of it is all about. Now, if there was a disaster and Macko is not fit, or there are, you know, like you say, there is a stacked position, then I bring him back in. The other guy is Genge. I would drop Genge because he's just not really had a great season. You know, he's in a struggling team. He's had injury problems. He's not found his best form. Whereas you'd argue Moon has been in great form. So actually, I wouldn't just drop one of them. I'd drop two of them.
Wow. Jonathan Bim will shake up the squad.
Huh? I wouldn't have objected to Moon and Genge swapping places, but no, it's about winning a World Cup, so to get the best players in, and Mahler is
but
that.
But what if they'll start getting resentful, the other big one.
So yeah, Tim, I'm with you on the loose head position, by the way. The player who has been receiving most of the headlines is a player that wasn't actually training with the squad last week because he was doing fitness work off-site, as we discussed.
I think it's incredible.
And it's Danny Cipriani.
Incredible.
Has not made it. So it's 2 weeks on the bounce that Sippers won't be training with the full squad. He is presumably now on a standby list. Mm. So he's going to train with Gloucester and might be called up if he's needed.
I can't help but think that the treatment of Danny Cipriani is just, it's just not good.
Go on.
Well, a lot of these lads' careers are shaped by the prospect of England. There's no two ways that he's good enough, right? He definitely is. He definitely is, right? And they keep sort of teasing him, like, yeah, you're kind of there, you're nearly there. Hang around. Hey, sign for Gloucester rather than go to France. Do this, do that. He's signed again. And by the way, no problems with signing for Gloucester. Great club. But, you know, there is an element of him being guided by potential England chances. I wish they would say at the very outset, yeah, we want you. However, if everyone's fit, we're not having you. So, you know, go and do your own thing. Go move abroad. Go make some more money. I don't think it's a good way to treat Danny Cipriani, or in fact, anyone. They should be far clearer about what they expect.
How clear do you know they have been, or unclear do you know they've been? Do you know if there has been any promises of, oh yeah, you'll be in the squad?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Ricky.
Well, should there be, or if there ever should
be? Well, I don't. The answer is, yeah, I guess that there should be some very, very clear guidance. And it's not good enough to just say, hey, if you're good enough, you will play, you will be picked. Because he's definitely, in some categories, the best fly half in England. In other categories, maybe not. But, you know, if you want to do certain things...
One question on this. Would you extend the same courtesy to every single England player or potential England player? That they should be given a kind of...
No,
a
I wouldn't.
..gauge on their likely inclusion. It just seems like what you're asking for is totally... I'm not disagreeing or agreeing with whether he should be in or out the squad. I'm just saying that I don't see any logic to your point
should be given players at different
guarantees or a percentage chance and these kind of things.
I agree with that.
No, because I would say it's different for different players. So, you know, if you've got a young lad like a Ben Curry or a Tom Curry or Ben Curry competing for an England spot at 20 years old, he gets no guarantees. You just go out there and you work as hard as you can. If you've got a guy in the twilight, but towards the end of his career, you know, approaching his 30s, you know what you can do. He's a seasoned professional. He is what he is. Do you want me or not? And I think that's a perfectly fair thing to ask and fair information to give.
Well, and I would say that Eddie Jones's position, I mean, and the way that things have had, players have been hopping in and out of squads, don't be surprised if he's back in. This might be some bigger plan, like, or out of the blue, uncapped Joe Marchant is suddenly in the squad. Yeah. We should not be having, in my opinion, uncapped players arriving in the squad at this point. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Joe Marchant. I've been banging the drum for him for ages, but it just doesn't seem any logic to have uncapped players appearing at this point in the process.
But you know why this is, yes? It's the whole Milner Scudder thing. So everyone's looking for their Milner Scudder. Milner Scudder's ruined rugby for an awful lot of players who have got caps because every team wants a Milner Scudder to, you know, emerge during the World Cup. So I think that's why Marchant's in. That's why McConaughey's in. They're all looking for a Milner Scudder.
But what I was, there's absolutely no... Eddie Jones owes nothing to Danny Cipriani. Danny Cipriani has made himself eligible to be an England player. He is being considered for a World Cup spot. Due to injury, he may well get called up into a World Cup squad, even if he's not selected initially. I cannot get on board with the age of a player having any relevance as to what a coach should say about their potential chances. No, you're either available or you're not.
Well, there is the other element, isn't there, that Eddie Jones has actually said he wants, I can't remember the actual phrasing, and please correct me if I'm wrong, something along the lines of he wants sort of a disturbance within the team. He wants them on edge. Is that roughly what you said? Like conflict or uncertainty?
He said certainly early on he wanted kind of the edge to them, the challenging edge to them.
Mm.
And he has said in other interviews that he likes to keep people on their toes by doing unpredictable things.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's madness, Frank. And can you imagine going to work every day, which is effectively exactly what these guys are doing, and having no idea if you're secure, unsecure? I mean, just think about your day job. Would you work better? Would you work harder if you were, you could be sent home tomorrow?
I know from speaking from a rugby perspective, where there was competition in the squad, it made me train even harder.
Yeah, but you were doing rugby as a hobby. What about if it was your job?
Well, I was doing it at a reasonable level.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, yeah. But
I mean, Tim,
if it was my job, well, the England stuff is not their full time job, as in they have club jobs.
Yeah, but it is equivalent to full time money. That's the other thing. It is life changing money
on top of full time money.
Yeah, yeah, true.
So, I think I've seen. So I'm not a fan of everything that Eddie's done with the squad. I do not have any problems with him dropping Cipriani. And I don't have any problem with him having moved players in and out of the squad, because one of the guys who's in this time, Mike Brown, I think has been playing his best rugby this year, having been dropped, moved to the wing and then dropped for the autumn. He's got himself in the best form. He'll be 34 by the World Cup.
Yeah.
And so he is training phenomenally hard, and that has been rewarded in this current squad with the place. Now, on Cipriani, there is an element of me that thinks, we spoke last week about Eddie Jones wanting the fittest, fastest players, to the point where players have had their careers ended in England training camps because he wants the strongest, most conditioned players. Now, Cipriani was out of the squad last week because of his conditioning. And the other two guys who were out of the squad because of their conditioning, Underhill and Watson, have been now retained or stepped back into the squad. And this for me gives me a sign that Cipriani, I might be totally wrong in reading the wrong signals here, but one explanation that fits the information is that Cipriani has not performed as he was expected to when he was given that signal.
And just to go back to the Mike Brown thing, you could actually say the same thing happened to Dan Cole, who found a bit of form.
Yeah. Although I would actually question the Dan Cole form.
Yeah, fair enough.
But you're right, Dan Cole has been dropped in and out of the squads.
And, there are other players who did respond in exactly the same way, Chris Robshaw being an example, and still haven't made the squad, which is... it's absolutely fine. That's the way Eddie's gone. But so I don't have any big issue with any of his selections. And again, don't get me wrong. I love Joe. I'm a big fan of Joe Marchant. My criticism is only how, if a player has any potential to play in a World Cup, can you only be selecting him in an England squad now?
Yeah. How did you not know this already?
Yeah, because Marchant has been, maybe not been around for the whole of the 4-year cycle, but he has been on the scene, and certainly the last couple of years, last probably 3 years, has been playing really well for Quins. Now, again, it is a position where you're pretty stacked, because the main two guys ahead of him, Henry Slade and Jonathan Joseph, are exceptional. And arguably, the guy after that could be Elliot Daly, who is also exceptional. If not, it'd be Tuolagi.
Yeah. Do you know what I think England need?
Where are you going with this?
I think they need a bit of France. I think they need a little bit of that French attitude.
The chaos.
Well, no, no. Eddie Jones is bringing is bringing the chaos, right? And I look around and I look at their horrific performance against Scotland, and I look at downfall 2018, and I look at all the evidence which everyone pointed. Well, I pointed to before they played. I think, yeah, he's not doing a great job. And if they had a bit more France about them, they can get to the World Cup and just say, look, Eddie, we're doing it our way. Because look at the players that they've got. You've got the Corvus Saracens team, which are unbelievably good. You just named two guys then who play outside centre in Jonathan Joseph and Henry Slade. Goodness me. I mean, the talent that this team has is off the Richter scale. And yet somehow, you've got performances like Scotland. I just hope that they can...
The second half of Scotland.
Doesn't matter, it's still in the same game.
just because the first half was a very, very good performance.
Well, which makes the second half even more baffling.
It does.
Yeah, so maybe a little bit of that French attitude. Sorry, Eddie, we'll take it from here. And I tell you what, they lose one of their big games. If they lose the France game or the Argentina game, I fully expect that to happen.
Well, a player revolt.
Yeah, just like they did under Brian Ashton.
It will be interesting. Well, we got to see... can we move off the England squad now?
Yeah, if you want.
I think we've covered the tiny bit of information. Because mm-hmm. That segues quite nicely into the Rugby Championship.
Yes, it does.
Where we saw a glimpse of Argentina, the Argentina that England will be playing. Tim, I'm guessing you didn't get to see this. It wasn't on the big screen at Latitude Festival.
Sadly not. People would much rather watch... guys in spray on tightness level trousers.
Well, there were some tight tops and tight shorts in this game.
I want to talk about some tight shorts later, but yes, let's talk about these tight shorts.
Argentina, New Zealand. So this was an interesting game, and one that Argentina could have won.
Yes, they could have.
Were it not, so they did look, they so. Where to start on that? So it was 16-20 or 2016 that New Zealand won. Now, Argentina had two back-to-back penalties, which they kicked to the corner in injury time on New Zealand's line, right on New Zealand's line, so 2 5-metre lineouts. And New Zealand illegally sacked the first one and then successfully sacked the second one. And Argentina, at that point, they looked absolutely dead on their feet.
Yeah,
and it's understandable because only 2 weeks ago, the Argentina team, the vast majority, 80%+ of the Argentina team, were, of course, in Christchurch playing against the half of the New Zealand team that wasn't playing today. Most of the best half of the New Zealand team that weren't playing today.
Today?
Today as in...
Saturday.
Saturday. That day. Yeah, Saturday night.
So, my opinion on this is Argentina on the cusp of something very special. Like, this team is on the cusp. Even though they've had two losses against New Zealand, effectively, right?
Yeah, New Zealand teams or a New Zealand team.
Just
and
call
Zealand.
It New Zealand because yeah. You know, all the Crusaders could play for New Zealand.
Well, pretty much all of them do play for New Zealand.
Exactly.
Well, actually, you're probably best calling it two New Zealand B teams because the Crusaders is basically a New Zealand B and this was a kind of New Zealand... 1.2 or something like that, 2.0.
Now, I think the reason that they can't beat them is simply because they've never beaten them before. But when they do, the floodgates will open. And I think it's just a change of attitude. You know, when you lose that fear of playing a team, all of a sudden it becomes a lot easier. I think that's where Argentina are. And I think come the World Cup, they are going to be a mighty fine side. They're struggling with New Zealand, but who doesn't? I mean, think about Wales. Think about how good Wales are and how good that they've been recently. To my knowledge, they've never, ever beaten the All Blacks. In fact, the only team to have beaten the All Blacks from Wales was Llanelli in God knows when.
Wales, never. Not in the 70s?
Pretty sure they've never beaten them. Mm. I mean, check that out. They certainly haven't beaten them in my lifetime.
Yes, I think that's definitely correct. Mm. So, the Argentina team and the Jaguares, it was interesting because... half of me thinks that this game was there for the taking, and had Nicolas Sanchez not thrown that intercept try on the stroke of half time, where he tried to lob the ball over 6'9", Brodie Retallick.
Line-out expert. Yeah. Renowned for reading balls in the air. Brodie Retallick.
He didn't even have to raise his hands above his head. He caught it
right
in the breadbasket. Anyway, if they hadn't have done that, New Zealand don't go in with a whatever 10-point lead at halftime.
It's so New Zealand, isn't it?
Well, it's so New Zealand to score at the end, but they were gifted at the end of a half. They were gifted a try. So on that, I think, God, maybe Argentina could have done this. But then I also think for most of the game, they were only kept in it because New Zealand gave away stupid, stupid penalties repeatedly. Mm. And Sanchez kicked well. He took their chances. But they very rarely broke the line, Argentina. Their only try came from a crossfield kick, and the majority of their field position came from stupid New Zealand penalties that they stuck in the corner and tried to grind out a result, and in the end, ground out that try. I think they struggled breaking the line and with that attacking threat.
I think New Zealand are getting reckless around the breakdown. I really do.
Well, I was watching this and thinking, this is weird. Like, New Zealand are too intelligent to give away this many penalties. And I was thinking, maybe, do you know how, I've not played FIFA for years, but you know how computer rugby games, they used to have like scenarios where it was like 15 minutes left, you're down a man and you've got to hold on to a 1-0 lead. Mm-hmm. Or you're away and you've got to score 3 goals in the last 10 minutes to win the game.
Are you talking about the scenarios where you load up the scenario?
You preload the scenario.
So like Madden used to have this, like you've got a 2-minute warning and you've got to drive down the field with Tom Brady and just hit Dion Branch over and over again. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So it almost felt like, and this is, I'm sure it's wrong, but it almost felt like New Zealand were deliberately giving away penalties to see how they would react in a game where the ref is giving them loads of penalties against them, because some of them were just mind-numbingly stupid. When you know New Zealand are not stupid, they're all such good, intelligent rugby players.
Wow, I love that thought,
but no. That would be such a maverick move for Steve Hansen to give his players the confidence to, don't worry, I'm not going to judge you. I know you might not get a World Cup place, but that's what I want you to do.
What we need to do is test ourselves against penalties. Like,
I need to be whiter than white and be top notch. So I just think I've watched a bit of highlights and I've read some reports, and yeah, it just seemed like New Zealand were uncharacteristically brain dead at times.
Yeah, yeah. So that's my attempt to explain that. Stupidity from New Zealand. Another thing we saw in this game, so a failure of New Zealand was, so three times Beauden Barrett made clean breaks, mm-hmm. and three times the All Blacks failed to convert those clean breaks. Now, I'm not saying that's part of the strategy to mess up clean breaks, definitely not, but it was just weird. And I'd probably put an element of that down to, there were some new faces, there were some new combinations playing together that haven't played together for a while. Don't forget, New Zealand haven't played since the autumn. So I'd put that down to them being a little bit rusty.
You know what, I'm just looking at this New Zealand team here. Yes, it is a so-called B team. My God, it's one hell of a B team.
Oh, it's still stacked.
Who are the guys who definitely get in?
Owen Franks.
Yeah, Franks, agree with that.
Whitelock. Kieran Reid.
Yep. So there's three in the pack.
Although Ardie Surveyor did play very well.
Ardie Surveyor's class.
Ryan Crotty, if he wasn't injured at the moment. And
hang on, hasn't he been left out of the squad entirely, though?
Yeah, because he's injured. Because he's got a dislocated thumb or broken thumb.
Ah, right, okay.
So he would be in. I'm certain that he would be in. Possibly Jake Goodhue. Possibly Richie Mwunga. The way he's playing at the moment, which could push Beauden Barrett to 15, potentially. So they've got options there. So you're going to push at least four or five, possibly more, players in. Joe Moody as well, at loose head prop.
Quite a few lads to come in.
Yes.
God damn, they're good.
Yeah. So yeah, it was an interesting game. Argentina's failure to break the line will disappoint them.
And now I've got another theory about that. I think Argentina and Jaguares do one thing really well, and they don't vary it. They need bigger runners closer to the breakdown. They don't do that. Everything comes off 10.
What? They need bigger runners closer to the breakdown for...
Well, because you need to come close into the breakdown in order to kind of make sure that you can't get the line speed up on the 10. When you go... Newcastle did this for a little while, which is they were playing everything off flood, which means you can set your line speed. And then if you have as quick a line speed as, say, New Zealand do, you're catching people behind the gain line all the time. And that's what I felt that certainly Jaguares do a lot. And I've seen Argentina do it, where actually if you're playing off 9 a little bit more with a little bit of complexity, it sets up your players off 10 far, far better.
So one other thing that I'll mention, two other things. One, I've mentioned it before, but I love Pablo Matera. I think he's playing some phenomenal rugby.
Ex Leicester Tiger, Pablo Matera.
Yes. Yeah, I know. One of the Leicester Tigers they let go. What, add him to the list. Harry Thacker, Pablo Matera, Alex Lewington. There's a fair few.
And Matera, he was less effective in this game because the New Zealand defence was so effective. But what he's done really well this year, they like to stand him in the wide channels.
Yes, so they do.
Kind of like New Zealand do with Dane Coles. When he's playing, or Hurricanes do with Dane Coles. So they like to get him outside 13. He's a big, strong boy. He's pretty quick, and he's great at offloading. And it's something that when England play them, or anyone for that matter in the World Cup, you've got to be alive to that.
So is this an example of like rugby sort of developing in ways it didn't expect to? So I always think of this as you had the Jackal. And then you had counters to the Jackal. And then you had a situation where, because you had counters to the Jackal, people weren't jackaling, they were going through rucks. And therefore, when the ball went wide, the majority of Jackals that you then encountered were wingers on wingers, because that's a really good Jackal situation when the ball goes wide. So then the teams counter it again by making sure they've got a little bit of bulk out wide. So in terms of Dane Coles, a hooker or a flanker, just to give that extra bit of protection. Then all of a sudden you think, hang on, I've got a big guy out wide. Why don't we use the big guy to start offloading? And then Dane Coles is actually invented and he's an absolute weapon. And I wonder where this is going to go next.
So I don't think...
It's just trying to be quite efficient, I think. Just trying to... If you imagine a scrum or a line out or something, just having a couple of players who don't run 60 metres across and are there to try and create a mismatch coming back the other way. That's, it's as simple as that.
And so I think that's true. And also, to kind of slightly expand that point, you're also allocating, you're utilising players where their skill set is best suited and to an extent where people would least expect their skill set. Because if you look up and you see Dane Coles, he's not the most athletic looking bloke. You see him out in the 13 channel or just outside the 13 channel, you think, oh yeah, we've got this guy.
Got him.
And then he puts on the burners or offloads or... Does whatever.
Bounces someone.
Yeah, bounces someone and then shows and goes.
But it's one of those things like Leinster did it, right? And they went blindside. They went blindside with two props and a hooker. And I thought, that's brilliant. Because, like, who are you going to be facing? Like, an opposition winger.
A scrum half.
Yeah. And these guys can shift and they can handle. I thought, yeah, that's absolutely awesome. So, yeah, I just wonder if there's another wrinkle to this whole thing which we're going to see again.
Well, that's something to watch definitely of Argentina, is Matera in particular, who's so good at it. The other thing that was interesting in the game was the tackle stats and the perception of how good Argentina's defence was.
So, okay, well, what was the perception first?
So during comms, the perception was Argentina's defence is brilliant.
Okay.
And it was very, very good because for one thing, they prevented New Zealand from scoring a try, scoring any points in the second half, which is almost unheard of. They did have very good defence, and they put in some individual big hits, but they missed a lot of tackles, and they had a rush defence that would slow people down and disrupt New Zealand, disrupt Bodie Barrett and Jordan Barrett when he was coming into the line, but not necessarily make the tackle, and prevent a good flowing attacking move from New Zealand, but concede yards in doing it. Mm. Does that make
sense? Let's see if he needs to be consistent, because when it's Owen Farrell or England,
completely different.
It's like it's unacceptable.
It is unacceptable.
So, okay.
So the stats I've got in front of me, I've seen slightly different ones, but they're similar. The rugby paper reported different to the ones I've got in front of me now. Made 92 tackles, missed 54 tackles, so less than 60%. Pathetic. Rugby paper had it a bit over 60%.
I kind of don't care. Look at the score. Yeah.
Well, they lost.
Doesn't matter.
They lost.
Yeah, they lost.
Game over. Go New home.
Zealand, when was the last time New Zealand scored 20 points or less?
Good question. On, Lions?
And never scored a single point in a half.
Lions?
Yeah.
So
yeah. So it does.
It's not lost, right?
I think it's a good example of the stats don't matter to a degree, or certainly picking individual stats to fit a narrative is all fine and well and good, but generally they don't matter.
Mm. There are lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Absolutely.
Who was that? Was that Roosevelt said that? FDR? I think he might have said that.
Don't know. Someone smarter than us, certainly.
Certainly that.
Tackles, part tackles, and missed tackles. Only one is acceptable.
Jonathan Beardmore, 2019.
There you go. Put it on my gravestone.
Like the stat, like I say, I take stats not with a pinch of salt. You can definitely get some benefit from them, but they do not tell a whole story. But one stat I would like added nonetheless is yards after contact, like in NFL.
Yeah.
Yards after contact would be good.
Yeah, it's all of the yards after contact. I can't decide if this is miserable defending or amazing play. So when something is really, really good, it's usually one of the two. And Lau Mappi's try. I can't decide if it's just incredible strength or incredible laziness.
Oh, he is so strong.
I'm going to give him the benefit. I don't know. Stop him. You've got to stop him. You're professionals.
Yeah, lots of professionals have tried. Do you see the game? It was the semi-final against the Crusaders where he carried four of them over the line.
Yeah, amazing, that's right. He's a beast.
He's so strong, and he's got such a low center of gravity, but just so explosive. Mm. Yeah, I would not if there were six of them hanging off him. I would not blame the defenders on Lau Mappy there.
Yeah, well,
now how about as a slight interlude? I don't have the message in front of me because I was just trying to find it then. But we've been asked about a drinking game which you had previously mentioned. I think basically there's a lot of weddings happening, there's a lot of kind of social type occasions, sessions, and I think people are looking for a bit of inspiration on a drinking game. There was one that it was apologies to the person who sent in the message, but I do remember they asked, it was the one where Phil said about everyone having to buy a drink, but they didn't know what the exact rules were.
Yes,
one that you've done with a rugby team before.
Oh, is this Royal Rumble?
Royal Rumble, yeah. The rules are definitely not one for a wedding, more of a stag do game.
Okay.
So everyone has to buy a drink. Sometimes you can put a price limit on it of, say, £10 if people are going to be stupid. £10 or £15 maybe. And everyone goes to the bar and you buy whatever you want. It can be a simple single drink. It can be multiple drinks poured in one glass. It can be a bottle and a shot. It can be anything. The idea generally is to make it look...
It could be four pints of like lemonade if you wanted.
Yeah. It could
that's
be.
That's cruel in a very different way.
It could be. Okay. It's so the idea really is to make it look as horrible as possible. You put them all on a table and then you draw names out of the hat. And the first name out of the hat gets first choice of all the drinks. And so it begins and it works the way down until there's a handful of people, five, six maybe, left and five, six horrible, horrible looking drinks. I remember having
the next name doesn't get picked out of a hat until the person has finished it.
Yes, true. You've got to finish your drink before the next name gets picked out.
Oh, clever. So, is it WWE rules you've got to have? Is it 32 contenders? Is it 32 or is it 30?
In the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, what was it for Royal Rumble?
Don't know.
What do you mean don't know? Everyone, every self-respecting man knows the numbers for the Royal Rumble, except for me.
I was never a particularly big wrestling fan.
Yeah, it shows.
Too cool.
What's your fate? What's your go-to, JB? You quite often run a kangaroo course and such.
That's a good question, and you've got me on the hop now. Excuse the pun. Can I come back to you?
Yeah, for sure.
I like the simple ones. Do you know the one where you have to count the amount of people around the table and then you've got to stand up? It kind of gets everyone involved quickly and it's easy to understand. So you go around and if it's 12 people, you stand up, you say one. Someone has to stand up and say two. If you stand up at the same time, you finish it. No, you do five fingers. If you get to the last one, you do four points.
So you have to be the only person to stand up and say that number.
Yes.
If two exactly. people more, they all drink.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
But yeah, no, nothing quite as unusual as the Royal Rumble, sadly.
Hmm. Have you got any go-to drinking games, Tim?
I was just trying to think as I say that. I was just trying to think in the context of people having an afternoon session. I know that's fine. I will rack my brains, but I like the themed ones like that. The Royal Rumble, that's a great one. Any suggestions at Rugby Podcast? But there you go. I think that's definitely answered the question was asked.
Anyway. There are 30 competitors in the WWE Royal Rumble, there as I suspected, rather than 32.
So it's a pre-season. It's a pre-season session then for a squad.
We did at Sedgley, this is years ago, like 13, 14 years ago, and everyone was actually dressed as wrestlers.
I went to the weirdest stag do once, right? And the fancy dress theme was wrestlers. And we went there and we stayed in what allegedly was Lionel Messi's old villa, right? So apparently Lionel Messi bought a villa just outside of Mobs. And that was where we were going to go. And a lot of the lads that we went with, the term peacock would come to mind, right? So we all went through all the effort of dressing up as wrestlers. We all went through, one of the lads went through all the effort of finding out all the names of wrestlers and getting all of the entrance music ready. Nice. They unveiled each of the wrestlers to their walkout music. And then because all the lads were so, precious about how they looked, they decided before we left the villa to get changed into shirts and then go out into more. So we only got dressed up for each other, which is the weirdest thing.
Oh,
I know, it's always creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, that is creepy.
That's Jeffrey Epstein levels of creepy.
Very topical, JB.
As always. Now, before we get on to the next Rugby Championship game, remember this, you can come watch us live doing a show, much like this. In fact, it will almost be exactly the same as the one that you're listening to now, except it's going to be in Twickenham Stadium on the 7th of September,
correct.
I do believe.
Saturday the 7th, yes.
And where would one book a ticket for the 7th of September? I mean, clearly not through Stephen Jones's Twitter, but where would you get the details for this, Tim?
Well, I mean, and it's worth pointing out that there are lots of other podcasts that are joining us for this rugby bonanza. But yeah, we'd love you to come along. We're thankful for all of the people. There's been loads that are coming along to spend the day at Twickenham in the new East Stand. This is podcastlive.com, as simple as that. We have pinned a little link to it as well on our Twitter account, which is at Rugby Podcast. But www.podcastlive, select us as your preferential podcast, and yeah, we'll make sure we've got a seat near the front for you. And we've got lots planned as we try and make rugby great again, launching JB 2020 campaign to become an RFU. I need to sort out what this word is. I was going to say commissioner, but that's not the right word.
Commissioner? Commissioner. I'd love to be a world rugby commissioner. Like the Roger Goodell of all rugby. No, more like the Vince McMahon of all rugby.
Be like Vince McMahon.
The Vince McMahon of rugby. Perfect. I'd love that.
You would. So yeah, launching that and Negroni Party, World Cup preview, live show. And yeah, we're gonna have a really good old shindig. But there's a load of other people there. But podcastlive.com.
Yeah, and one last thing: if you do want to come, I suggest that you come in one of our Akuma Rugby tops. So go to Akuma Rugby. If you get the Merino wool jersey, you also get a free Egg Chasers tie. So Akuma Rugby Shops Egg Chasers. There we go. All of your advertising done, except for the dynamic insertion, which is coming in about 5 minutes.
Before we go on to the other Rugby Championship game, New Zealand Wales, how many games have Wales won?
I'd say zero.
Tim?
Zero. New Zealand. Oh, no. They've never won in New Zealand.
Definitely never in New Zealand.
They must have won in Wales. I'll go six.
It is three.
Wow. And how many times have they played?
According to this, only 34.
That doesn't sound right to me.
But on that, there is a 30...
Hang on. So when they went on tour, right? When they went on tour with Sam Warburton and they played them three times, that was 10%, more or less 10% of the games they've ever played against each other.
This is what I'm looking at. 34, New Zealand have won 31 of them.
And when did Wales win?
But when, so when in 16, yeah, 2016, they played him three times, Auckland, Wellington, Dunedin. Wales won three out of the first four.
Good.
Wales haven't, so according to this, Wales haven't won since 1953. And it is
it wasn't even the same sport then.
It is a 30 match winning streak for New Zealand at the moment.
Well. Glad we beat him at cricket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly did.
So, South Africa, Australia.
Cool. It was really, really cool. I love this South Africa team. I love this. In fact, is there a country in the world with more talent than South Africa?
In terms of the depth playing elsewhere?
Yeah, depth. They've got the biggest depth chart of any nation playing
easily,
rugby.
Easily, isn't it? I mean, it's not even close, surely. And the talent available, the talent not available to them is almost as impressive as the talent available to them.
Well, this...
I think England would probably run them close in terms of depth, but not actually. They would be second in terms of the depth, but... and the number of players, but South Africa, far and away. I mean, aren't domestically, they basically cutting their player pool in half?
What do you mean?
We're going to get even more of them in Europe.
What, because of people, some of the Currie Cup teams wanting to play in the Pro 14 or Pro 16?
Hold that thought, because we'll investigate that further.
Yeah, there is some news on that front.
What were we saying? Oh yeah, depth. Yeah, it is frankly staggering.
Well, this was pretty much a second team, other than Etzebeth and Lude.
Lude Diego. I tell you what, whoever snaps him up are going to be one lucky team, because that boy can play. He's going to be lighting up a field near you sometime soon.
Very close to some people.
Oh yes, I mean. What foresight to realise that this was a great player by certain people who may have signed him.
It's interesting. In the past, you've sort of said that you think second row is not a place you should spend really big money.
Well, it depends what kind of second row it is. And I would suggest that this is the kind of second row I'd want to spend some money on.
And surely it depends how many runs to the pound as well.
Exactly. Yeah, this is a high-quality signing by, whichever club decides to sign him.
Interesting. Did you see this game then?
I saw a lot of it, an awful lot
bits of it.
So it was Australia. It wasn't the strongest possible Australian team, although I would say it's a little bit stronger than the South African team. South Africa overall looked pretty comfortable. Their pack is very good. Their halfbacks, considering young Herschel Yanchis was making his debut. And Elchin Yantis is second choice, comfortably second choice. Those boys played amazingly.
I love Elchin Yantis. He's much maligned, and yet he's so talented when he wants to be.
His
hair is much maligned.
It is.
Say again?
His hair is much maligned.
Very good. He's class. Well, not all the time.
Yeah.
Some of the time.
When he wants to be,
when
he's amazing.
When he's hot.
He kicked very well in this as well. Kick sticks very well. I think he just missed one penalty. Herschel Yanchis, though, the young boy, the young scrum half. God, South Africa are stacked at scrum half.
Yeah, I mean, you would have said, wouldn't you, maybe a year ago, this is Faf de Klerk's position. Nailed down 100% Faf de Klerk's position. That's not so obvious when you watch Herschel Yanchis.
And I would argue that Faf was actually the second best South African scrum half in the Premiership this year.
Come again?
Agreed.
Don't know. I mean, you know, it brings different things.
Rennick had a better season than him. Rennick was the best scrum half in the Premiership this year. So Rennick, who did score a try in this game as well.
In the 80th minute.
As well as Herschel Yanchi's two. So Faf will be back in this team. But the competition, and as I said before, competition, that drive your players to perform better. God, these boys are going to be performing well.
Oh, I tell you who was immense. Detoy. I thought Detoy was brilliant.
Yeah.
And the guy can shift as well.
Peter Steph.
Yeah.
You see his chip through.
I did. It was amazing. Which was incredible.
That was almost Herschel Yanchi's. It wouldn't, sequentially, it wouldn't have actually been his hat trick, but it almost led to a hat trick for Herschel Yanchi's.
Yeah.
Only stopped by what was a phenomenal tackle by Tom Banks, who had a very good game in a kind of stuttering, stop-start, misfiring Australia backline.
Yeah. Let me for 2 seconds talk about a man who I think is rather eye-catching and kind of almost endemic of exactly why South Africa got so much talent. André Oosthuizen. That guy looks magnificent.
Oosthuizen,
is that how you say his name?
The guy who most famously got smashed by Owen Farrell with a no-arms tackle that wasn't given as a no-arms tackle.
Cheat. that's the only way to stop him. Frankly, Owen Farrell was right. I'm sure he has someone else's shorts on. Probably Faf shorts. But like, the guy looks magnificent.
Yeah.
Like, just all quads.
He's a big, strong boy.
He looks great. He's so South African, it's painful.
He looks like, what's his name? The South African. Rohan Jansi von Rensburg.
It's funny you mentioned
if
that.
If he was in good condition, his sale days.
Von Rensburg is a lot shorter than him, probably true, a lot heavier than him as well. But yeah, that's exactly who I was thinking of. Because when Rohan was in his absolute, was on peak, his absolute A game.
Yeah.
And you could see he was unplayable.
When you could see every sinew in his quads.
Yeah, and now,
twitching.
You know, he's over here now, so doesn't qualify for Springboks. And guess what? They've got another one. They've got another one just like him, but taller.
Well, he does qualify for Springboks, of course. In the same way that Faf de Klerk qualifies for Springboks.
Oh yeah, they don't have a rule, do they?
There's no rules.
In cock.
Yeah, you're right. And you're absolutely
a number
right.
Of others. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And Francois Steyn as well, who came off the bench.
Yeah, and I thought Francois Steyn
Conus Reiner. Marcel Kurtzier of Ulster.
Sorry, I thought Francois Steyn had retired.
Don't think.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, concussions, I'm sure he...
Francois Steyn, are you not thinking of the Racing Metro...
Yeah, that's exactly who I'm thinking of. Who?
You're thinking of... what's his name? The 10/15.
Yeah.
Yeah, Francois Steyn is the massive centre. He won the World Cup in 2007. Plays for Montpellier and South Africa on Saturday.
So who am I thinking of? He plays for...
You're thinking of Patrick Lombe.
I am thinking of Patrick Lombe. Well done, Phil. Yes, that is very, very true. I did like the selection of... Well, I like this, as you well know. If you don't have an 8 who is an out-and-out 8, play a 7 in the 8 shirt because you get the work rate. And that's exactly what Francois Lowe did.
Yeah, he played really well. His work rate and his work on the ground as well. Because he disrupted Hooper.
Yep. So let's just talk about Australia for a second. Because in a way, yeah, we know South Africa are good. We know they're at home and they've got a load of talent and they're getting better and better and better.
And a load of talent to come back in.
Yeah.
Ominously.
I am getting more and more confident about South Africa's chances of reaching the World Cup final.
Oh, yeah. I am
they
as well.
Awesome.
I think you should strike off France from your board.
No, it's going to be France.
France-South Africa final.
I'd love that. That'd be the perfect final. So rugby-ish. Forget all these skills and all that nonsense. France versus
One thing about Australia, without, I mean, albeit like from the bits I've seen, Dwayne Haylett-Petty dropped a sitter. Karevi had a chance to put a try away. But that said, the back line, a back line without Falau just looks flat.
You know, I was thinking about this because I knew it'd come up. I don't think it's going to matter too much personally. In fact, if anything, it might, in a way, benefit them. Bear with me. So I think the problem that Australia have had for the longest time is being able to play a load of boys who are super talented, but not really a specialist. I include Falau in that because everyone speaks of him as a fullback, but actually for Australia, he's played on the wing, he's played at 13, so on and so forth. And what they ended up having is this mix, this mishmash of different players playing different positions just because they were talented. Like Kirtley Beale would come in at 10 and then he'd come in at 12 and now he's going to be
15.
Wherever. Back in the day, James O'Connor, Lelia Farno does 12, he does 10, you know, so on and so forth, right? I think now that he's gone, it means that you can properly concentrate on giving, what's his name? The guy who I just mentioned.
Kirtley Beale.
Kirtley Beale. A run at the position that he is best at. You can get a real 12 in there who does 12 stuff really well, and it might actually give him a little bit more solidity, because other than that, you had to change the back line to incorporate both those guys because you can't deny their talent. I actually think, in a way, it might improve them.
Well, I don't think they're going to go down that route, though, because KB's not going to play 15. I think he's probably going to play 12, if anywhere.
Max Neuer there.
Yeah, I think they've still got the problem of KB and Tamua, who are both probably the best and the position they've played most recently is 12.
Mm.
And then you've got Karevi, who is a very good player, but very similar to Kurindrani. I think possibly, so Tom Banks might be one of the few nailed-on players because he is an out-and-out 15. The rest of them, but KB, Kirtley Beale did look very good.
He looked class, and I
for that for the try, for the, for the
and the way that he intervened, just he came into the line late. I think you could see a lot more of him doing that from 15 than you could at 12.
The guy who needs to be worried will be DHP, Dane Haylett-Petty, who he did score a try. Tim, you mentioned him bombing a try, and he was totally at fault for Herschel Yanchi's second try. He stupidly was chasing a lost cause at the ruck and just ignored the blind side wing that he should have been defending. So he didn't have his best game.
Yeah.
But also, Reece Hodge is another good example. Reece Hodge is a great 13 who can play 15 or wing and has been pushed out to the wing because you've got lack of players in some positions and almost too many centres.
Do you know, Australia should build themselves a depth chart. Do you know, like the NFL do? Like, this is my number one wide receiver. This is my number, like number two, so on and so forth. Just to see where they all play and then play them in the positions that they want to play.
It's really, they've got Bernard Foley. That's it.
Yeah. Bernard Foley's the only man that can't play any other position, and he plays the most important position.
Unless you're going to bring Quade Cooper back.
Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility.
They're going to end up with Lea Leofano there or something.
It's going to be. It would be something like James O'Connor at 10, Hurley Beale at 12, Israel Folau at 13, Howlett.
No, you have Reece Hodge and you'll move Karevi or Kurindrani out onto the wing.
Well, why not? I mean, they're so flexible.
Michael Hooper will be playing 15.
Well, he has played centre.
I know.
Perfect.
For injuries.
Yeah, it's going to be some weird team like that. In fact, they played Matt Gitter at 9. Anyway, I think we've covered Australian rugby in more than enough detail.
What were you saying about South Africa thing? The Currie Cup teams?
Well, so it was mentioned that the Currie Cup teams, so like the Pumas and Griekus, I'm probably saying that wrong, Griekus, and others potentially wanting to have a bit of the Pro 14 money, like the Cheetahs and the Southern Kings.
Sweet Pro 14 money.
That's been mentioned for a little while, but it looks like it's unlikely to happen given the developments that happened yesterday, specifically the rugby papers. suggestions or allegations that a British league will be coming in 2 years' time, which was an alleged quote from a chairman of a Premiership rugby team.
Interesting. Which chairman would this be?
They did not say. Oh, right. So, unnamed. So, they were threading two strands together, one of which is the CVC deal for Premiership Rugby for $275 million, which I don't think I've seen has definitely gone through, but they were talking about it as a done deal. And the potential for CVC to also buy a roughly 30% stake in the Pro 14. And
the Six Nations as well, which is another thing they're looking at.
Well, that's separate to this conversation.
Yes.
I don't know whether it'd be one or the other, or two or one.
I wonder if CVC wants someone to be a commissioner for all their rugby.
I thought you were a committee member, not a commissioner.
No, skip the committee. No one needs to. But I wonder if they wanted the Vince McMahon of rugby.
Laying the smack down.
Yeah, just making up random matches because I feel like it on a Friday night.
That does feel like the sort of spine holding all of this, all of these rumours together is CVC.
CVC is a godsend to journalists. Now, this is not a knock on the rugby paper who've done good work and it's a good story, so on and so forth. But the reason I say it's a godsend is because nobody, including many people in finance, know what any hedge funds really do. In fact, most hedge funds don't know what other hedge funds do. It's a complete mystery. In fact, if you asked a hedge fund what it did, they'd probably say, we employ very intelligent people and we back them with money. So it's not, none of them kind of match each other. And because of that, you've got this element of mystery and intrigue, and people just put on what they think a hedge fund should do into their story. So CVC lends itself to all sorts of things, like they're going to buy Six Nations, and when they buy Six Nations, they're going to have promotion and relegation, and they're going to make the Premiership play rounds of rugby against Pro 14. Why wouldn't they? Because that's what hedge funds do. And it just goes on and on and on. So anything spoken about CVC, unless you're actually involved with them, I don't think you're going to know exactly what their plans are. And the whole point of private equity is that it's private.
So this was allegedly coming from a chairman who would be potentially on the inside of at least one of the conversations, the CVC conversations with Premier Rugby or the CVC conversations with the Pro 14.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is another thing as well. Would CVC share that with a chairman?
It depends how far the negotiations are. If they had to get the club's buy-in in order to sell a stake, and they thought this was attractive to the clubs, they would do.
So I would have thought what's attractive to the clubs, right, is saying, I guess it's more attractive to the Celtic clubs than it is the English clubs.
It is, and the reaction has been seemingly generally positive from the Welsh side.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Unquestionably, because there would be a lot more revenue coming to the Welsh side, and certainly fans of English teams have seemed a bit kind of nonplussed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to see the Dragons come up to the AJ Bell.
Yeah.
As always, with these sorts of things, what I instantly think of is who stands to gain what from this story being out. So
who does stand to gain, Tim?
Well, no, I'm not. Well, I'm just saying, I'm not necessarily speculating as to who, but I'm always take stories like this because there may be some people that would stand to gain if potential stories like this were in the pipeline. There might be people who think this is the way forward and will make them lots of money, and so they want to try and gauge opinion by getting it out there in this sort of form. It may well be just a total pie in the sky.
All right.
So no real substance to it whatsoever.
That's an interesting question. Let's actually discuss who does benefit from this announcement.
Anyone, so potentially, depending on how it's taken, anyone who was looking to sell a club.
Yeah.
If you're going to have some kind of mega deal or mega deals on the table, someone, for example, Leicester Tigers, or if there are any of the Welsh or other chairmen or owners who are looking to enhance the sale value of their club, this might not harm that position.
Team that's worried about potential relegation in a couple of years' time or in the next couple of years?
Yeah.
Yeah, because this would not lend itself to relegation, so you would assume it would be a I think it actually says you'd have a 25 team league because you'd have the 13 English academies plus potentially 12 others.
So,
but that is not clear. And for the record, I am not suggesting that Leicester Tigers have released this information. I'm just speculating.
Of course, because there could be a number of different reasons, be genuine and it could be scurrilous.
To be fair to you, Phil, they have got five different chairmen, so there's every chance
it could be any one of them.
just on the broader point, I really don't like it.
No, I don't either. I think it's an awful idea.
I think certainly for the English clubs, it's not a good idea. There's no real suggestion of what the Irish, and I've not really seen much about what the Irish think about this, but I'd suggest it wouldn't be in their interest because you'd have more competitive games, which from one side would be good, but from another side with a limited player pool and the IRFU hat on wouldn't necessarily be a good thing.
Yeah, so there's a few things, isn't there? Number one, I'm pretty happy with the Premiership as it is. I'm pretty sure that you two are as well.
Yeah,
I think it's the best league in the world, bar none, by far.
In any sport.
In any sport. I mean, it's certainly in rugby. there's that. And then there is the European Cup, the Champions
League,
which is the real golden goose. Even though it has had its sponsorship decreased, I understand, particularly from where it was when it was the Heineken Cup. Well, it is the Heineken Cup.
But it's back to being the Heineken Cup, yeah.
But that is, I think, rugby's premier club.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's far superior to Super Rugby, and it's absolutely brilliant. Why do I want to destroy the Premiership, which I love so much, and then...
And negatively impact the Heineken Cup.
Which I also love so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to be fairly well run anyway. I think that... The secret to all this is making sure that the Celtic clubs aren't left behind, or regions, or whatever they want to call themselves. And you've got to kind of square that circle. The other thing that I don't like about it is, this is something which Super League does, and I think it's really tin pot, which is stop changing your format. If you've got a good format and you trust in it, stick with it. And people say, we are trying to attract a new... Yeah, that's the one I hate. I hate it when we're trying to attract a new audience. Not interested. But we have a good format. Leave the format as it is. Super League have done this thing where they went, the playoffs, the club call, the super, whatever it is, they've split the league in half. They've done all sorts to try and entice more people in. And frankly, it doesn't work. All that matters is the quality of your games.
Agree with that. Definitely. So,
sorry, just to be clear, are we in favour of this or not?
No.
No.
Not. There's been no specifics muted. But based on what I've read, not really.
Tim?
No.
No. I'm just trying to think if I can be more balanced about it. I'd need to see more proposals.
Yeah, yeah.
And, see exactly what they meant by this. But no,
I was a fan of a Welsh club, I might be more interested in this. Because more money, more important games.
Yeah, if the Welsh weren't so Welsh... they would have joined the Premiership when they were offered it all those years ago. Seems daft. So daft.
I wonder if anyone regrets that decision.
Probably not.
other news.
Please, enlighten me.
There's not a huge amount of other stuff. Mathieu Bastereau was in the news this week.
Good. That's always a good sign, a good news cycle.
Because he's moving to Lyon.
Excellent.
And he wants to play number 8. Or there's a suggestion that he might start playing number 8.
Okay, so...
Which does seem like a bad idea to be moving to Lyon if you want to be playing number 8.
Yes, because of course Lyon have simply the best number 8 in Europe.
Best number 8 in France.
Europe. I would say this, if he wants to go and learn under someone... Lyon is a great place to play. Maybe do a couple of years there under the tutelage of Carl Ferns. And then
Bastereau can play the away games and Carl Ferns can play the home games.
Perfect. That is good, actually.
Perfect, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be like the NFL, when the quarterback has a little earpiece and, Ferns guide him around the field, tell him what to do. So, yeah, it'd be good. Good. On a serious note, I just don't think he's got the work rate. I mean, I'm not sure this is... a complete revelation to anyone.
No, it. I mean, I don't know. I genuinely thought when he announced he was going to play in New York.
Hang on. Yeah, what happened to that?
I think he has been or is still doing that, and this is after.
Ah.
I thought that would be kind of his. You know, when like George Best went out to pasture and played 5 years in
a pasture.
New York Cosmo
were not out to pasture. That team was unbelievable. Yeah, they had like, who was the guy up front who sounded
Pele?
Yeah, Pele. They had the, who was the Italian that bagged a load of goals? He was like their star man. I can't remember his name. Made Pele cry a lot.
That was literally
one of the best teams on the planet when they played.
Were they not all past it?
No. That was the whole thing.
Was Pele not indulging in some Cornerstone products at the time?
Oh, whoa. Cornerstone, have they announced that? What? Hang on. You guys carry on talking and I'll get up the New York Cosmos or whatever they were called.
Okay. So one of the things... Well, there's two other things on our little running order. One of which was... Tim, we didn't get to speak to you last weekend after the excitement of the Cricket World Cup, but I guess you didn't watch it because you were at a festival.
So annoying. Oh. Yeah, exactly. I was in Glasgow, and the quality of 4G was absolutely dreadful.
Terrible.
So yeah, I was watching it in little sporadic bursts. It was soul destroying. Actually, I'm not going to name the person I was interviewing, but basically I was like backstage interviewing someone. And
who? Tell us who.
No, I'm not going to say who because it's not fair on them. But I was zoned out.
Oh, right.
Such a small amount because I was thinking, I was imagining what's going on. The Super Over was happening. I was aware it was happening. And I had to sit there and talk about bloody music and stuff.
Well, just know that whatever your most vivid and wild imaginations could never have done justice to the real thing, Tim. It was an unbelievable spectacle to watch.
Yes, I completely agree with that. It was unreal, actually.
But there was some talk early last week about how a rugby game could be settled in a similar manner, so not going to the penalty shootout or the coin toss. How could you settle a rugby game in a similar manner on Twitter and elsewhere? And one of the suggestions, which Ben Ryan jumped on because it's apparently one of the proposals for Rugby X, was a one-on-one in a 15-meter channel. Now,
boat race, drinking.
I do like that, actually. That's better. Is it, no, the one-on-one...
Eddie Jones would have me in his squad.
Yes. You'd be in the 31 squad.
Hang on a minute. How about something completely completely left field, okay? You have a coin toss between the two captains, right? And whoever wins the coin toss gets to decide whether they want to have five scrums or five lineouts. And then it's... Yeah. And then it's almost like a sudden death lineouts or scrummaging. So you put the ball in. So if it's a scrum, you put the ball in. If you win your scrum, then they put the ball in. They win their scrum, you put the ball in. As soon as you lose your scrum...
You'd have collapses and like...
Yeah,
you would. Yeah, you would.
You'd have actual...
Scrums are a magic eight ball at the minute.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All the other players have to leave the field. So it's just the...
Just the pack.
It's just the pack. Or... It's same thing with lineouts, and all they've got to do is drop the ball down to the nine. Okay, so it's always off the top, no drive. So you throw in, ball onto nine. They throw in, ball onto nine. You throw in, Brody Retallick steals it.
Interesting.
I reckon if it was the 15-meter channel thing, I don't know how Ben Ryan and Rugby X are actually doing it, but I would have it so you pick an attacking player, and then all 15 players have to that are on the field at the end, or a big number of them have to be involved. Once the attacker picked an attacking player, then the other team pick a defending player and then both of them are then used. You can't then use them.
I like
match-ups.
I like that idea for that. I don't like the one-on-one for... I don't mind it for sevens or Rugby X, but for 15s, the number of one-on-ones that you get in 15s rugby is very, very small. It rarely, rarely happens.
Would so
it's
you?
Just not an appropriate skill for to settle a 15s game.
If you were 5 metres out, okay? So, okay, if you were 5 metres out, would you bat yourself after a tight game? Would you rather defend 5 metres out or would you rather attack from 5 metres out? You've got to score a try.
Well, so that's kind of where I'm going.
Am I Exeter Chiefs?
Yes, you are.
Well, then I attack.
Definitely.
I think that might be the best one, actually. It's a 5 metre scrum, right? Who gets to choose where it is?
So, well,
a line out, 10 metre line out. Well, or you can,
so yeah. I've kind of thought this through a little bit. And here's what I do.
Oh, here we go.
So you are given 3 penalties. Now, one is right in front of the sticks, centre field on the 22.
Oh, I like this already. I know where you're going.
One is on the 5 metres and 5 metres, right in the corner on the far right-hand touchline. And one is the same on the far left touchline. Now, you can kick sticks. Alternatively, you can choose a scrum, a line-out, a tap-and-go. And from those 3 penalties, you've got to score as many points as possible, which will give you some interesting tactical decisions, certainly later on. So if you make the one in the centre the last one, and the first two are really hard to take the points on, so you're going to go for the tries.
Hang on. Explain this to me again. How many penalties do we
3
have?
Penalties for each team.
Three penalties? This could last for hours.
Nope, 3 penalties. One, so 3 penalties for each team.
Yeah.
You play for until the phase is over. So until there's a knock-on, a try, a penalty given or whatever. A penalty given by the attacking team, that is.
Yeah.
So let's say your first one's on the right-hand touchline. You've got the option of kicking the sticks, which would be very difficult, taking a penalty, taking a tap, or kicking for a line-out. Mm-hmm. And you do the same for each three, taking it in turns for each team, and the most points wins. So theoretically, you can score 21 points.
Oh my God, I've just thought something amazing.
From that.
Just let that one sit for a minute, because that's bloody brilliant, Phil. Okay. That's such a great idea.
I think you've missed a key step here.
Go on.
The key step to this, right, is it is predetermined which side of the pitch that it's going to be in. Okay, it's always on one side of the pitch. And what you then do is you build a bunch of corporate boxes and you sell them for an astronomical amount on the hope that it goes into extra time. Everyone wins. So like you have the haves on one side, like the have side of the stadium, and the have not side on the on the other side.
That's a relative term with rugby fans.
Well, given that no World Cup game has ever gone to the penalty shootout, how much more do you think these tickets are going to be worth?
Well,
1%, yeah. 0.1% more.
Just in case. Now, I actually, I'm surprisingly prefer my idea, which is it's a scrum where on the 5 meter line wherever you want it. If they knock on, if they don't score a try, the other team wins. That's true sudden death.
I think Phil's would be absolutely gripping because, say, team one go and they take a risky 3 points and nail it, and then team two are like, oh, should we kick as well or should we go for 7? Oh, that's really good. I like it.
And then if you try and fail, the pressure mounts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
you could kick 2 kicks.
If only
the other team gets 7 points and you miss the final kick. Oh, that's good.
If only someone at World Rugby listened to this.
If only.
What is it currently? It's the 5 kicks.
I think it goes to 5 kicks, and then I think it might even go to a coin toss after that.
Literally, every idea we've had is better than 5 kicks. Whoever came up with 5 kicks should be fired. Immediately fired. He's probably still employed somewhere.
5 kicks, yeah.
5 kicks. 5 kicks, think about it, is ludicrous. It's the least exciting skill in rugby. It's very, very important.
Especially when it's five play. So it's... it can't all be the same player.
Yeah. Certainly. Imagine if it was the same player, though. It'd be so boring.
Yeah, that would be even more boring.
Unless it's Bowden Barrett.
At least you got to see when Leicester-Cardiff... I think the rules might have changed now, but when Leicester played Cardiff in the Champions Cup or Challenge Cup, yeah, with Jordan Crane and Martin Williams. I think Martin Williams missed.
Martin Williams missed.
Yeah.
Jordan Crane missed.
Did he? Was he not the one who scored just before Martin Williams?
I thought Cardiff had two misses, and one was Tom James. I seem to think Tom
Jordan Crane got the kick, and Martin Williams missed it, and that was the deciding.
I thought Leicester missed one, Tom James missed one, or Martin Williams missed it, and then Jordan Crane got it.
Penalty shootout. Here we go. I've got it up now.
Uh-oh.
So only one Leicester Tiger missed.
Let me guess who that was. Okay, here we go.
You won't get it.
What? Okay. watch me. How?
Kiss.
No.
I would say it is...
Harry Ellis.
That's a good shout.
No.
Back or forward?
Back.
What about what's his face? He's the New Zealand winger, Hamilton.
No, he successfully scored. He was playing that day.
Okay,
Scott Hamilton.
Not Jordan Murphy. I think he's too talented for that.
Jordan Murphy successfully got a kick.
Centres. Oh God, I'm all at sea here. Who were the centres?
Matt Smith.
Matt Smith was on the bench. Didn't take a kick.
Vesti, hip kick.
Liam Lloyd.
So, Vesti scored a kick. Vesti was playing 12. Hip kiss was playing 13. He didn't take a kick.
So, one of the centres, which wasn't one of the three centres that we named, missed a kick.
No, one of the backs, not one of the centres.
Steve Booth.
No. He's a winger.
Tom Vondel?
Nope.
Goodness me, I haven't. Who's the other winger? Austin Healy?
Nope. This was 2008.
2008. Who was the other?
Oh,
no, 2009 even.
I'll be upset if Tim gets this. Anasana Tuolangi?
Nope. Not
was
playing.
He, was he that Irish guy? Noel? No.
Oh, I know who you mean.
It was the Irish guy, Tim.
Niall. Niall.
Niall, that's it. No, Noel. Noel or...
Is Niall? It was Niall someone.
Nope.
What? I give up.
Giving up. Johnny Murphy.
Oh, God damn it.
Damn it.
God damn it.
I told you wouldn't get it.
No, you were right.
And then the two who missed for...
Tom James, Martin Williams.
Tom James, Martin Williams.
I knew Tom James missed one, which meant there had to be a Leicester Tiger in there somewhere.
Lee Halfpenny was playing then.
Lee Halfpenny will have... If he gets selected for the next Lions, I think he's gone on four Lions tours.
He won't go on the next Lions.
Depends how well he's playing.
True.
I mean, he's one hell of a player and very unique player.
Alan Wynne-Jones is far more likely.
So, yeah, he went to South Africa, although he'd never played because he got injured. In fact, does that count? He was selected for the Lions.
He was selected, yeah.
I think he went. Then Australia and then New Zealand and then, yeah, he could go to another one.
There we go.
Excellent.
So we've solved how World Rugby final can be sorted.
No.
We've got any other suggestions, though, because we have that. Anything we say tends to become something which someone else adopts. So, you know, through us, get your idea to the top.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah, let's leave it there. I had something fundamentally important to say there, but let's just leave it there. All right. Well, you can find us on Twitter at Ruby Podcast. You can find Cocker at Cocker. You can find me at Jay Beardmore. And Phil will slide into your DMs if he feels like it.
Like a greased up penguin.
That's right. like a slippery weasel sliding on Visqueen. We also have an Instagram, which I don't know the password to, and I'm not even sure if we use it. Do we use the Instagram anymore, Tim?
I don't really use social media anymore.
Oh, he's so...
For the best.
He's so above the fray now.
For the best.
And we've got a Facebook. Just find us on Twitter. It's far, far easier. Maybe wait for all the moon landing stuff to die down. But then find us. So until next week, when we will be back in our normal Sunday slot, from me, Tim, and yes. Phil, let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.